So, what did you notice? What did you experience? What arose in your awareness, in your experience?
Are you asking me, Badina?
Why not? Yes.
No, so I didn't hear you well enough.
Okay, so well, you're responding. So, what did you notice, Sarah? What did you experience? Did you notice any?
I experienced some nice sounds, really nice calming sounds, and some grating sounds, and some other sounds. I tried to work out what they were, but I also found it very relaxing until there was a loud sound. So it kind of varied. The sound awareness was interesting. Different sounds had different effects, very different effects.
So
But it
some
was
of
also
the sounds you found relaxing.
some I found relaxing and really in tune with what I was doing. Others I found grating. Others I was curious about and wanted to work out what they were. Others that were too loud. Yeah.
Okay, and when they were too loud or they were grating, what did you notice arising?
I did actually notice physically something happening in the body in a way. There was a reaction. The body kind of, if it was too loud, it was kind of, oh, got to wake up, as it were, got to come out of this. But if it was grating, it was just sort of irritated something in the body. You almost felt something physical.
So your body reacted and didn't like it. Did your feelings, your thoughts then?
I noticed it was the sort of thing. It's like there was the kind of sweet rapper type sound, and when you're watching a film or something, this sweet rapper type sound, you just felt, yeah, that's an irritating sound, but just let go. I was in the state where it was really nice to just let go of the irritation.
Okay, and it sounds like you're aware of your responses and your reactions to the different sounds, whether they're ones that you liked and you found relaxing. And it sounds like when you say you were relaxing, presumably there were sensations in your body that were more relaxed, but was there.
Yeah, I was relaxed. I was kind of focusing in on my breath as much as I could.
Okay, thanks, Sarah.
I mostly noticed the curiosity, yeah, that I had my eyes closed and the sounds that I recognized were absolutely fine and I could just let them pass through. I was quite enjoying listening. And as soon as there was a noise that I didn't know, it was kind of my eyes just opened without me even realizing. And I was looking at the screen going, what's that? What's that? What's that? I caught on to myself and was like, oh, okay, maybe I don't need to do that. But yeah, just the curiosity was very strong in me.
So it sounds like, yes, there's the curiosity that arose when you couldn't recognize the sound, but also a need to know.
Yeah, I need to follow through and locate that almost before I even kind of noticed that I was doing it. It was just so instinctive. What's that then? And I knew kind of a part of me knew it didn't really matter. I mean, it wasn't harmful in any way. It wasn't going to impact me, but I just really wanted to know. Yeah.
And that wanting to know, I think sometimes it's, well, for me, it's linked to wanting to feel a bit more in control and knowing what's happening around. Sometimes it's, as you say, it's just more just open curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, it's come out of a background of a lot of trauma and hyper alertness, so that was a real problem. And now I recognize that that is a much healthier kind of just interest and wanting to know rather than that kind of panicky kind of, oh my God, what is that? But yeah, there's an edge of that obviously still there that, yeah, wanting to locate, pin down, know, yeah, recognize, understand. Which probably relates to what we're saying in the group about trying to embrace boredom a little bit more. Yeah, I think it'd be good for me to go into boredom.
So I'm curious about the boredom then. So How can you describe the boredom and what it's like?
Well, I think I've been very avoidant of boredom, and I've got a very busy imaginative mind that kind of creates a lot of things, and I get a lot of kind of images, colours, sensations in meditation, which I really enjoy. So going deeper into a more spacious awareness, I found quite dull for a while, and now I'm kind of realising that there's a real richness in that experience that I'm kind of opening up to. But it's taken me a while to kind of realize that boredom can be actually really useful and interesting in itself as a state.
Well, it's interesting. So boredom is kind of very much how we respond to something, but it also sounds like there's something about the lack of the excitement or the what you normally have, and therefore you're calling it boredom rather than... Mm.
It's just a label, isn't it, really? But yeah, if I drop the label, then it's an interesting, spacious experience. Yeah, rather than just boredom to avoid. Mm.
But that also, in a way, is a... In our responses and reactions, we can sometimes find our way to, well, what are part of our conditionings? What are part of our views? What are the things that we, you know, like and want to have? You know, so you clearly like that. The more exciting stuff. So is there some loss when it's not there? I'm just wondering, because boredom is quite a blanket term and it might include a lot of more subtle things in your experience.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, kind of going into the more subtle experiences rather than the bells and whistles. Yeah, which actually I'm kind of finding, and partly that's because I've been ill, so I've had a very constrained experience, and actually I've learnt that there's a lot of kind of enjoyment in that. I've actually just noticing much smaller, more subtle things. So yeah, just a different experience. Mm.
Mm. Okay, thanks.
For me, the different noises triggered associations with different kind of situations and events. So like I had a feeling or an image of like a roulette table that triggered a kind of negative feeling. And then I had, you know, the typical meditation noise. I don't know what you call it, but that kind of bong noise, which triggers a kind of positive feeling. So I was trying to focus on the noise, but I was kind of being taken to different places. And then I have some of which are negative, some of which are positive, and then I was feeling them in my body. Which I just sort of assumed everyone was having the same reaction, but it sounds like they weren't, which I find quite interesting. Yeah.
Thanks, James. Well, I think it is interesting. I mean, and I think what you're saying is exactly, you know, you hear a sound and it has associations and pleasant associations, or maybe more negative associations, and maybe it'll trigger memories or thoughts, or it'll certainly experience stuff in your body, because actually sound, you know, is vibration really, and we can, even if we're not in the same room, if we were in the same room and we were listening, it's the sound of the singing bowl, actually, not that, you know,
right,
it'll make different sounds, but basically and we can, as meditators, we can be almost like dogs with that Pavlovian training. The sound of a singing bowl can sort of make us associate with meditation and maybe going a bit deeper or something. And we maybe think of it's a nice sound, it's a restful sound, relaxing sound, or whatever. Or maybe we don't like the sound of it, you know. Maybe we're really deep in our meditation and the bell goes and it's like, you know. But yes, and the interesting that image of the roulette table and things like that. So very much bringing together inner out experience, past, present, and a more worldly, more whatever else. It's interesting just having that in just a short amount of time listening to some sounds, isn't it? That we can go to all those places. So there was quite a lot that was arising in your experience.
Yeah. And it's actually interesting because you know certain experiences that you've had, you don't necessarily know whether you perceive them as negative or positive or negative, and then in that situation you actually have a feeling which you can identify as positive or negative. So it's actually quite helpful for kind of knowing what you like and you don't like, I think, when you're kind of sat there in silence and an association comes up, and then you can kind of know if it's negative or positive. I don't know. I guess it's all part of the whole meditation, the whole point of meditation in terms of, sorry, not the point, but one of the helpful things in meditation is kind of that awareness, right? And understanding yourself better. And I think that's a good, that was a good exercise actually for understanding what I perceive as positive and negative. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're explaining it really clearly. And listening to you, I was thinking, yes, we do think in terms of this is positive and this is negative, but that's not necessarily true.
Yeah. And
it's a sort of subjective label, isn't it? So from that point of view, the Vedana response where we just say, oh, I found it pleasant, I found it unpleasant, or maybe it was just somewhere in between, I didn't really feel strongly about it, that's more accurate. Or I liked it, I didn't like it, you know, I preferred that sound to that sound, or this sound made me feel anxious, or this sound made me feel relaxed, you know. But we tend to then say, oh, this is negative, this is positive, and get quite fixed around things, and then our views and our actions and our reactions get solidified out of habit, you know, when we hear a particular sound or have a particular experience, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, yeah, it kind of reminds me of that when people say that everything's neutral, which I just find bizarre to get my head around, but you know, there's that saying.
Because... Sorry, I don't mean that. When people say everything's neutral, what do they mean?
Well, I don't know if you've heard that before, but I've heard various people say that in terms of, you know, everything is really down to your perception. So no matter what happens, it can be, you know, neither negative nor positive. You can perceive it as neutral because perception is in our control. Don't know if that's making any sense, but, and it's in a very extreme view, which I've not agreed. I don't agree with this, and it feels highly theoretical. But I have heard people argue that, you know, nothing is positive or negative, everything's neutral because it's down to our perception. But sorry, I know I'm taking this a bit off course, so apologies.
Yeah, everything relates to everything else. It's very interesting, isn't that?
Could I just come in there?
Yes, do.
I'm just interested in what James was saying, because I was aware of not really being able to stay very well in the moment with the sounds. Like when you rang a bell, I thought, oh, I would hate that if it's waking me up, but I would love it if it was summoning me to dinner.
Yes.
Same thing, same sound, different context.
Context. So
I kind of went off on one, really.
No, I think that's a really good point, you know, that, you know, context. And it is our, how we respond, how we react, you know, is out of our past experiences and the context and how we interpret what's happening and how we, you know, whether we think it's something that we like or don't like, you know, as you gave a very clear, very graphic example of, you know, like if it's waking you up and you don't want to be woken up, then but if it's, I'm hungry and the bell's going and I can get something nice to eat, it's a very different feel, isn't it?
How does that relate to craving and aversion? Is it like you create like a, there's that push-pull, isn't there? And then you get kind of attached to it, and then that causes a certain amount of grief you get attached to.
Well, yeah. I think on a very simple level, if we like something, there's going to be a bit more wanting more of it. So that can lead easily into craving. If we don't like it, then we, you know, want to ignore it, push it away, or want it to stop. And that can lead to the aversion. And then the third thing that we're always working with is ignorance and delusion for the way things really are. Yeah. So when we're responding out of views and making up stories or whatever, that's part of that delusion. And they're all there. And there's nothing wrong with all of those, because that's just part of life and being human.
So the idea of things being neutral, I suppose, is like a way of taking some of the pain out of life. Maybe that's that theory, that if you can neutralize things, then you haven't got those opposites going on and the attachment, I suppose.
Well, I think from a Buddhist perspective, we wouldn't necessarily, I mean, it's...
We wouldn't say it in those terms, but...
No, I think what we're striving for more is equanimity. And equanimity is very much engaged, and it's rooted in metta and kindness, and also rooted in insight to reality and that awareness of dukkha, that awareness of impermanence and insubstantiality, everything being in process, that's there. And we can sort of see conditions arising, passing away, and we can, you know, when we're, if we were to do, say, the Upekkha Bhavana practice, which is like the Metta Bhavana practice, but we're trying to cultivate equanimity, it requires us being able to be with both the difficult and the painful and the suffering and the unsatisfactory, and to also be able to be there with sort of joy and contentment, and then the reality isn't one or the other, that we can hold both, we can hold contradictions, we can hold the whole of our experience in a place coming from kindness and compassion and care.
So it's a more embodied,
it's much more
reality, isn't it, and less alienated,
and it's much more engaged, and it's just that our attachment is different, our relationship to is different, but it's not that we don't care, because I think sometimes we can think about being neutral as being not caring, but it's not about that at all.
No, it's much more grounded, embodied response, isn't it? Maybe it just doesn't, there's not so much, it's not, you're not holding on so tightly to it, so you can hold it lighter maybe.
Well, we're all just on our own journey, and there's things we might understand or not understand, and there's different languages and metaphors, you know, to try and point towards experiences that aren't really ones that you can put into words anyway. So you hear about emptiness and shunyata and things like that, and some people that will work with, and some people it'll just completely make no sense or freak them out. But there's something about, we're trying to cultivate, you sometimes hear the image of like a sky-like mind, you know, where our mind, you know, if you've looked at the big blue sky and there aren't any clouds in it and it goes beyond limits, you know, and then there's things, you know, when clouds are there, it doesn't stop the sky being there. The sky is always there, and there's layers and layers of clouds, which apparently are hundreds and thousands and millions of things apart from each other, but we see them in different ways. But the clouds come and pass away, don't they? And other things come through the sky, don't we, nowadays? We've got insects and birds that might be flying about, airplanes and helicopters that might be flying about, but they're all temporary, and they might be disturbing or noisy, and then they're gone. But all the time you've got that sky behind there that reverts to, and there's that sense that we can go back to that place of, anyway, that sky like mind, that's our natural state of being, if we uncover all our conditioning, if we're not getting so attached to our views and reacting and all that kind of stuff. And there's something about having the space that can contain everything, and making our mind, you know, there's our mind, you get the idea of a big mind or contracted mind or expanded mind and consciousness, you know, there is just consciousness and we're part of consciousness. But we tend to think of it, this is my consciousness and there's me and there's you and your consciousness. But actually, that's how we experience ourselves. But there is just consciousness and it's all interlinked and we've all got consciousness, and there's consciousness in the universe and the cosmos and all kinds of other beings that participate in that consciousness, which is quite interesting why from Buddhism's point of view, that's one of the elements is consciousness. You've got earth, air, fire, water. And you've got space as an element, and you've got consciousness as an element. And that's quite an interesting way of thinking, experiencing, which has gone completely away from, how did we get to that? Well, independence on certain conditions and certain conversations and people being interested in things, that's where we got to, isn't it, really? Yeah. Anybody have anything else they wanted to say?
Bodhi Lila, I've got a question that came up during our breakout group,
I noticed that you use practice synonymously with meditation, it seems to me. And I think of all of this as practice. Do you make a distinction? You know, I think of listening to you talking, me listening, me reading, me smiling at a difficult neighbor as practice. Mm. When you say we're going to practice later, meaning we're going to meditate, it seems very specific.
Okay, so it's one of those words that I use in lots of different ways.
Okay.
So if I'm talking about practice, my spiritual practice or my dharmic practice, then that includes absolutely everything. And, you know, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing is an opportunity to practice. You know, if I'm going to the movies, that can still be an opportunity to practice. You know, if I'm going for a walk, if I'm cooking, if I'm talking with somebody, what I'm doing on the cushion outside of meditation is still practice. My actions in the world, my ethical practice, acting, that's me trying to practice cultivating more insight, more awareness and things like that. And we do have various practices. So one practice would be meditation. And yes, there's lots of different kinds of ways we can meditate and lots of different specific forms it may take in terms of meditation practice. And we are, in a way, creating a particular space for that. So when I say, oh, now we're going to do some practice, I'm sort of saying now we're going to create some space for that. But it could be that we're going to do some chanting, you know, get into some devotional practice. You know, in the evening, we're going to be doing a bit of ritual and chanting. And that is devotional. And that is a practice in itself as well. And I think people, I'm sorry that I made that, may have given that impression, because that's one of the things I'm always trying to get people to go beyond, that it's not just about your meditation practice.
Yeah, no, I didn't need you to apologize. I just wasn't clear how, if it, you know, if, whether you meant something, I don't know. I just wasn't clear, that's all.
You know, and there's very much that threefold path of ethics, meditation and wisdom. Yeah. We need to be practicing them all simultaneously or, you know, ongoingly, and they all will feed into help each other in our development, in our growth kind of thing.
So small group work, small group discussion.
Yeah, that's
practice. Yeah.
You know, just sitting, listening to people, being with people can be a practice.
I guess the more awareness one brings to anything, the more it can be then practice, really, as opposed to going into something a bit sort of automatic. Yeah,
so I think there's always that, I don't want to fix things, but yes, we can either just do things the way we've normally done them, sort of in habit, or with lack of awareness, more an automatic pilot kind of thing. You know, like, you know, we're breathing all the time, a lot of the time we're not aware that we're breathing. You know, our bodies know how to breathe and just get on with it. But maybe if we're sitting down to do a mindfulness of breathing, then we're very consciously bringing awareness to it. You know, same like if we're walking, you know, we do a lot of walking around, most of us, and a lot of the time we're not conscious of that we're walking, we're just trying to get from one destination to another. But if we sort of do it as a practice, walking meditation, it's a very different experience. We're bringing awareness to our whole of our experience as we're walking in particular. Yeah, if that makes sense.
And
like chanting, that is a practice in itself. Mantra chanting, I've been doing quite a lot of that, especially over the last couple of years, where I might not do a conventional sitting meditation, but I might just spend some time chanting a mantra, and that's my practice, and that can be just as strong, you know. And devotional practice, rituals, pujas, some people may be familiar with them, some people not. Some people may have all kinds of reactions to it out of their own conditioning and views and preferences. But it's a practice, you know, just like meditation is a practice, and the more you do it, the more effect it will have. And it's a practice that's trying to cultivate. Practices are trying to cultivate different things or get us familiar with different things. where I'm at in my meditation practice is I'm trying to be a lot more receptive now, not make so much effort and just being open. But there's also another aspect of one's meditation practice where you actually need a bit of discipline, and you need to actually just do it, and you need to actually get down to the work, and you know. That's, you know, a long-term project. All these things take a long time, don't they? They say, wasn't it 100,000 hours of something to get a level of expertise. Well, I don't like using the word expertise in terms of meditation, but the more that we meditate, the more we get to know ourselves, and the more we get to, you know, maybe feel more comfortable around posture, maybe get to know how to deal when, you know, we're being distracted in particular ways, what might work or not work, the more we can maybe soften up our attitude and be a bit more positive and open and less judgmental to ourselves. That's all part of the work that we're doing in meditation. But there's also actually having the discipline of actually getting down and sitting or lying or whatever position you're doing your meditation in and actually doing it. You know, even if you don't do it every day, doing it regularly, that will have much more effect, having a continuity of practice. And if you do it every day, it will have even more effect, you know. If you're actually meditating, because you could just be sitting there and daydreaming. So that's another aspect where we might need a little bit of awareness, a little bit of discipline. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure that we can explore some of that later. There's lots of paradoxes, and I will never say do this or don't do that, because, you know, what might be right now will maybe not be right, you know, in a few months' time, a few years' time, and it might be right for me, but not right for you. So, yeah. I suppose what I would really like is that you get to know yourselves and you get more confident in your meditation practice, your ethical practice, your spiritual practice, and you get a sense of ownership. Yeah. The Buddha always said, test it against your experience. You know, don't, and there's a whole teaching he gives about don't trust the scriptures, don't trust the teachers, don't trust, you know, tradition. See what the effect it is. Does it have a positive effect? Does it have a negative effect? Does it lead to, you know, more awareness, more kindness, more generosity, more, what all the compassion, what all the things that you're doing, or does it make you more selfish or more, whatever the other things are? So very much that invitation to test everything out against your experience. Mm. I think sometimes it's hard to have that confidence in your own practice, but you know, learning to have that, learning to listen to yourself, learning to acknowledge actually that you have all that you need within you, and you just need to actually put it into practice in a way over time. You know, it can help to do it with others and can help to get some guidance and some teachings, but ultimately you're the one that's on the path, and it's your experience and it's your insight, your awakening that will be happening. And that will manifest in different ways to everybody. You know, what may look like somebody's life is in complete chaos may actually like be them going through a really significant part of their spiritual journey. You know, and sometimes we're not sure ourselves, you know, things happen to us and we may be thinking, oh, this is terrible, this is a disaster. But actually, when we look at it later on, we can see it as a crucial turning point, you know. Anyway. It is time to stop this session now. So thanks all for coming and for all the things you've shared and asked. I thought that was quite interesting discussions we had. And yeah, hope to see you tonight at 8 o'clock when we'll be doing some meditation and some, we'll do a puja of some kind. Yes. And if you haven't done a puja, I'll say a little bit about it before we do it. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much. And again, if you want to unmute or post anything in the chat, say goodbye. Feel free.
Thanks.
Thank you. See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you later.